dignity,
security,
freedom,
freedom,
respect,
justice,
equality,
equality,
remedy, and protection,
fairness,
fair trial,
criticism,
right,
work,
peace,
losers,
movement.
It's my mistake, let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
expression.
Expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
leisure,
health,
education,
culture,
human rights,
Cartagena,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, and with me is guest host Daylene Sliz, and our special guest, Robin Pitawanakwat, is not here yet, but we have Susanna Durange. And I've got a piece of paper here blocking my view of Susanna. I'll just take that out of the way so I can say, welcome, Susanna.
Welcome, Susanna.
Oh, and Robin's here, too.
Oh, I think Robin has just arrived.
Okay, we'll get Robin
Robin.
Down in front of the microphone there.
Welcome, Robin.
Okay, well, just adjust your mic there a little bit so that it's where you want it to be, and then I'll turn it up. Okay.
Here we go.
I think that's okay.
You made it. How wonderful.
So welcome, Robin.
Thank you very much.
So, I'm going to turn things over to Daylene. Oh, have you met Daylene? This is our guest host, Daylene.
Hi. Nice to meet you. We're running by the seat of our pants here today.
It's all good. Yes.
Okay. So, on the evening of April 9th, 2016, 11 young people in the Northern Ontario community of Attawapiskat attempted suicide. As a result, activists gathered at rallies and occupations at Indian and Northern Affairs offices across the country in Toronto, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Gatineau, and Regina. After an initial rally on April 14th, the solidarity camp outside the INAC offices in Regina officially began on April 18th. The INAC occupation movement that originally emerged in response to the suicide crisis on Attawapiskat First Nation has evolved into something more. Robin, Susanna, welcome.
Thank you.
You've just passed the one-month anniversary of occupation in front of the INAC offices. Congratulations. What is the mood like in the camp?
The mood is amazing. Like, that camp, it's what Regina and the world needs, actually. It brings people of all walks of life together, all ages, and everything is, it's autonomous, and every decision is based on consensus, and every move is based on consensus, and people have learned they have a voice and that they matter, and it's incredible. And yesterday, Ochapaways Reserve came with a teepee for us.
Wonderful.
So we now have a teepee there, and it's just an amazing place to be. The support is amazing. Random people come there and they start learning about the issues and realizing what they really are. And I don't know, it's amazing. And I think it's going to, when those tents come down, whenever that is, and we don't know, I think a movement has begun, mm-hmm. a people's movement.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be people coming together and standing up together, which is what we've always needed. And maybe Robin has another comment.
I feel that the mood at the camp seems to have hit a new high in the last couple of days. We had our 1 month anniversary, and it was wonderful. We had an open mic, and we had no idea who was coming, what kind of performances there would be, and it was just this wonderful mix of community voices. There was spoken word poetry, there were some original songs that were done, there were some karaoke style songs, and it was just this really, really diverse group of people, really diverse talents, and there was just this energy that followed through to yesterday. And the crowd for our supper time yesterday was more than I think it's ever been on just a regular day. And then it just so happened that was the day where we had two dancers come and perform for us. And they also happened to be from Ochapaways. And they didn't know that the teepee was coming from Ochapaways that day. But it was just this really beautiful coming together of many people. And, it is a really wonderful place to be. And there's just this pull to be there whenever possible for all of us, I think.
Have you been, are you surprised at the people who are coming to get information, who want to become more knowledgeable about the issues?
Yeah, I mean, even a random bus driver was walking to work and stopped by, and he's like, you're right, this isn't just, you're right. And random people come and drop food off. One person came by and she brought a little bag of oranges, and she said, I saw you here, and what you're doing is right, so I brought you this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised at the unity. I'm surprised at the random people that come by and ask questions. You know, there's the odd, still ridiculous stuff, mm-hmm. but it's not as much as like when, during OCA in 1990, it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people were camped out at Victoria Park, and the racist slurs were horrible. Undercover police came there with a flag, with the Canadian flag with a white man in the middle, and it was really weird. But we've had very little, next to none of that, and the unity and the support is incredible.
I'm just curious, Susanna, when you first started off, they opted to put a fence up. What was that all about?
I'll say a little bit, then I'll let Robin say a little bit about it. That fence was the property manager. It was not INAC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted us gone. And she didn't even come talk to us, and she got the police. And the police were saying, fine, you want them gone, but where's your property line? We can only remove them from your property. Well, she didn't know. And then she came back and said she knew where the property line was, so then they moved us up. And we're okay, so we're moved up. And the next thing we knew, these people were coming with a fence. And I told them, this is a human rights violation, it's also a fire hazard. Company didn't care. I mean, if they had to take it right down, they were going to get paid. And the workers were a little bit tense, but we were going, we don't want to shoot the messenger. We even gave them water. It was a really hot day, and they were waving thank mm-hmm. you. But then INAC looked out and saw this fence and said, we're fenced in, and if there's a fire, we're in trouble. And they called the fire marshal, and the fire marshal came and said, it's got to go down. And all the woman who put it up was outrageous. She sort of turned around now, and that fence was to keep us off their property. Didn't last very long. So Yeah, it was funny to watch it go up and come right back down by the next morning, but anyways.
Well, three cheers for the fire marshal.
But it was a symbolic thing that we were shut out of that space. And, I mean, we were still shut out of the INAC building anyways. They'd locked their doors, and it remained locked for, I think, nine days. Yeah, and we saw people turned away at that door, people coming from different provinces, people who had driven more than 8 hours to get there with three small children. And I know what it's like to take a road trip with three small children. And then to find out that the thing that you're coming there for isn't available to you. And there's no information on when or where it'll be available. And so that was something that was, at least with the fence being up, people could see how shut out we were. Whereas when the door was just locked, it wasn't as noticeable. So yeah. I do feel that was an interesting dynamic anyways.
Were they still answering their phone?
Not really.
No.
No, there was a call center that all the calls went to. And the call center didn't know what was going on. They didn't know that the office was closed. They released a little memo on Twitter. I think that's where most people found out, which is...
Yeah,
inaccessible for a long time.
It was interesting because I called that call center and they were like, "What?" And then I'm going, "Well," and they said, "Why are you calling me?" I said, "Your number's posted on the door." And they made me go to the door and read to them what was posted. And they're going, "Why would they give our number?" So, and if you tried the local number, you just got a recording and you couldn't get through.
Is that even lawful of them to shut it down like that? I mean, I suppose government can do what they want, but.
Yeah.
Where they seem to be.
And they were shut down right across Canada.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
It wasn't just Regina. They were shut down across Canada because people were occupying buildings.
Because of this occupation.
Mm-hmm.
That's really something. So, as I mentioned, the occupation has evolved from solidarity over the youth crisis in Attawapiskat to something more. What are the long and short-term demands from the camp to INAC? So, for example, reopening the office was one of the demands, dismantling the Indian Act, which is an appalling act, as we know, environmental scan of the communities, improving education. Can you comment on that?
Well, basically, like, we do have a whole list of demands that we're releasing slowly because we want them to reach each one, and revoking the Indian Act is going to be the longest one they have to do.
Yes.
And that act needs to go.
Yeah.
And it, in my mind, maybe not in everybody else's mind, they're talking about, well, what do we put in its place? Why do you need to put anything in its place? You don't need to put anything in its place. We know how to govern ourselves. So, I don't know. That's a whole nother issue. And we have a demand about honoring the spirit and intent of treaties, which is very different than the written treaties. Mm-hmm. There's a spirit and an intent. And also to look at that spirit and intent of treaties and say, how are we meeting the needs of off-reserve Indigenous peoples? Because they're not. And when the treaties were made, it didn't say on and off-reserve because there were no reserves. It's just this, you know, there's certain elements that we need. And in fact, people think that what's in the written treaties is that's all we get, but really that was over and above what we already had.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And you're just not getting that. And the main thing too is that the Prairie provinces are always ignored, totally ignored all the time, even by activists, by everybody. It's just somehow we don't exist. And so we want attention here, and they need to know that Attawapiskat is just many of our communities. Look at Lalash and Cody and Keys and Kisikus. They're at that same crisis level, and it's like something needs to be dealt with. We need to look at the suicides, the boil water advisories, the housing issues, the lack of culture, the lack of language, just a whole series of issues, and they need to be resolved. So that's part of it. And there's more in our demands, but they'll come out as they come out. And
oh, well, I was just going to follow up with, I mean, the government of Canada isn't even meeting treaties as they wrote them out,
yeah,
let alone as our ancestors understood them. So it, you know, that even just doing that part would be good. But and also, treaties existed before the Indian Act.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that the Indian Act needs to be replaced, I agree. It's not true, that it could be...
Just completely dismantled, demolished. There's no need for it. It's an antiquated...
Well, actually, if you look at the Indian Act, it's total, absolute control. And that's what it was made for, because before the Indian Act, there was the Royal Proclamation,
right,
which said that anything that was done on these lands had to have permission from the First Nations or Indigenous peoples. And then there was treaties, which also was nation to nation, and they're going, oh, I think we blew something here. Mm-hmm. These people got too much power.
Right.
So what can we do? And they made this piece of legislation like no other legislation I've ever known, because it governs us from life to death and after death, because according to the Indian Act, they're supposed to be executors of your estate as well. And I know no other piece of legislation that legislates even after you die.
It's appalling.
And so we don't need it.
No.
We don't need it for anything. And every part of the act says this can be changed by law of parliament, except for one where it says how they can remove us from our lands if they need to. And that one says this can never be changed. Mm-hmm. So what do we need this act for? The government needs it to control us. Mm-hmm. But we don't need it, and it shouldn't have been there in the first place, and it shouldn't be there now, and that's that.
Also, to follow up with the urban Indigenous people, too, we found out that there's more Indigenous people off-reserve than there are on, so and it's really close. It's like 51% or 52% of Indigenous people are off-reserve. So the idea that we don't have access to the same resources when we don't live on reserve is, yeah, it doesn't fit with the treaties. There's nothing in there that says that once you move.
And there's trillions of dollars in trust for us, trillions, that some people can access. I asked them if those trillions of dollars were paying INAC, which I really thought they were, and they said no. But some, on extreme cases, there are some people that have accessed some of the trillions.
Oh.
So if you say what could be in its place, if there's trillions of dollars and we know how to govern ourselves, resources.
Yeah.
We've got the solutions. We know the solutions, but we have no way of implementing them without those resources. So the money's there.
I read that there's currently 17 First Nations in Saskatchewan with boil water advisories.
At least 17.
At least 17 in Saskatchewan alone.
Yeah. And some of them have had those boiled water advisories
for 10 years now.
Yeah.
More than 10 years. There's one that had since 2002.
Yeah.
So lift the embargo on the money.
Yeah.
And allow you to get on with your lives.
Yeah.
And live a decent life.
I read a story someplace of a First Nations community that got one of their young people trained up to run the water plant. And I think they're done with water advisory, but you think to yourself, well, that sounds so simple. Why can't that happen everywhere?
The answers are simple, but they're making them complex. And again, it's about control. And then when I think further, it's about fear. I've always kind of mulled over what was going on, and I went to see that movie Mandela, and in there, he was negotiating, you know, his freedom and everything. And they asked him, they said, well, if you go out and you're governing, what are you going to do to us? Are you going to kill us? Are you going to run us out? And he said, you must stop your fear. It is your fear all these years that it made you do to my people what you've done. It is your fear of us. And we're not like that culturally. Or anyway, please let go of your fear so we can move forward. And this light bulb went on. And I went, oh. Mm-hmm. There's this fear that we're going to take over and everybody's going to have to go home. And I've heard this. And they say, where am I going to? And I'm like, why would we throw everybody out? Even if we went back to sovereignty, which I hope we do, because a treaty is nation to nation, it wouldn't mean others would go. We've always we had treaties long before the treaties among ourselves. There's wampum from out east that's even like in Standing Buffalo here of trade agreements that were made. So, and treaties, this true spirit and intent was peace and friendship and they say brother to brother, but I add sister to sister, relationships. So if we're upholding the treaties, we're going to have those relationships, and that's what that camp is modeling, the true spirit and intent of treaty, because we're all there together.
And sharing.
And share it. So that's what it would be. And when you have a sovereign nation, it's just like someone takes citizenship in Canada or citizenship in wherever.
It's self-determination.
If somebody wanted to join the nation and said, you know, this is what I can contribute, and yes, I'm going to follow your laws, I'm sure they would be made members. So that fear has to go.
Mm-hmm.
The fear has to go, and they got to get over that fear and quit controlling us and realize that we could live in peace and harmony.
Yeah, it all seems so simple. That's what always astonishes me. That mm-hmm. Where are the roadblocks here? Like, for example, your local INAC office. You've talked to them. What are they like? or is it just so bureaucratized they can't make decisions or fear making decisions
or don't have the power
to make decisions, and they're just administering the bureaucratic detail that is involved in the Indian Act? Is that kind of what's going on there?
I feel that it is to a certain extent, and there is a lot of bureaucracy. One of the things that we encountered that was so frustrating is we were asking for data. We wanted to know what was happening on each individual First Nation in Saskatchewan as far as water crisis, housing crisis, suicide epidemics. And one of the things that just they couldn't get over was that everything had to be in English and French. So in order to give us this document, it had to also be in French, but we were asking for information that we believed them to already have, so they should already have it in whatever languages they needed in.
Sure.
So we didn't understand why it was so difficult, but they saw it as a new document, therefore it would need to be translated appropriately into French as well, and that was something that it was just almost mind-numbing, the bureaucracy of that. So that was, yeah.
Another excuse.
And then we kept saying from day one, because all we hear is budget, 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 and they wouldn't go over the budget. And from day one we said, how can you think outside the box and not just think in budget? And they're so programmed, it's everything still budget, mm-hmm. budget, budget. I don't want to hear about budget. I want to know how you can get this done with or without budget. There's ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been... It's been interesting, mm-hmm. to say the least. Where it's going, I'm not sure, but it's been interesting. And, yeah, bureaucracy is crazy. Any decision they make has to go to Ottawa somehow, even about opening the door.
Yeah,
they wanted to open the door, but they had to get approval from Ottawa to open the darn door. Like, come on.
Susanna, you've been around for a while.
Oh, no, I'm very young.
Yeah.
Looks very young.
I'm just wondering if you've had an opportunity to speak to Carolyn Bennett at all.
Nope.
I've just thought that might be...
No.
Has anybody had much of an opportunity to speak
to... She went to the Vancouver occupation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did that go?
Well, I guess you need to ask them. I can give you my opinion how I think it went, but mm-hmm. they know better than I do. And I didn't speak to them after she met with them, because they left after they met with her. And I know one of their demands was to reopen this program that really helped youth.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, that program hasn't been refunded or reopened. So how did it go? I don't know. Maybe they had other deals they made with her. I don't know. I can't speak on their behalf, but mm-hmm. I know she went there. And I know but she also went to Attawapiskat.
Yeah.
And it went wonderfully over there. They don't mm-hmm. even have one mental health worker in there after that meeting. Not one. So how did it go? Photo op. I've been there. Isn't it wonderful? Yes, the youth felt like they had been heard. They weren't heard.
Mm.
Oh, we're going to build a recreation center, but it's going to take a while. And no, they didn't send. Same thing with Lalash. I mean, everybody went up there for photo ops. And what did Lalash get? They got two new security guards, and there's metal detectors in the school. Yeah, that's really going to solve all the community problems.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think it'll actually create more problems, because not only they don't have any supports in Lalash, but now they're being monitored. It just doesn't make any sense.
So it feels like a police state now.
Yes. I imagine it would.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see how. I mean, one of the things that they made mention of in LaLoche is that for alcohol, it's the same price across the province. Like, the provincial government has made it accessible for everyone to pay the same price for alcohol. Yet, to buy food,
it's outrageously expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
Like $32 for laundry detergent, a small laundry detergent. How much for a thing of peanut butter?
Yeah.
You know, it's, you can't afford it.
But you can drink.
But you can drink.
Yeah. And LaLoche, since the 70s, has been saying what they need. They have the solutions, but it's not being resourced. Mm-hmm. They know what they need. And two extra security guards and a metal detector in the school is not what they need.
No.
And I'm sure none of them asked for it.
No, they did not ask for it.
Right. Well, that gets us to the bottom of the first half hour.
Already,
yeah. And Daylene and I are talking to Rosanna and Robin about...
Susanna.
Who did I say?
Rosanna.
Oh,
she's
Susanna.
Here, too, but she's just very quiet.
Well, yeah, Rosanna's here.
It wouldn't be a normal program if I didn't mispronounce somebody's name.
Well, that's the combination of our names.
Yeah, that's true. Robin and Susanna, yeah.
Susanna and Robin. Okay.
We can now market ourselves as Rosanna.
Maybe I'm thinking CBC and I'm thinking of Rosanna Deerchild.
Okay.
That's my excuse. Anyway, we've come to the end of the first half hour and we're talking about the... Colonialism No More camp in front of the INAC offices there on Albert. And we're going to come back after the break. Did you pick any music for me, Robin?
I did. I picked a song that I really, really enjoy.
Did you bring a CD or something? Or
no, I didn't. No.
Okay, well, maybe
we'll sing it.
Yeah, Jim will sing
it. No, I only have it online, so...
Okay. Alrighty. Yeah. Well,
that's too bad.
Darn. What was the song?
It was the... That's All Right by Laura Mavula.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a good song.
I think what I'll probably do, seeing as time is going to be so short, I'll pick something from our snazzy Amnesty International CD. It's a four-CD set.
Okay.
And it's a bunch of covers of Bob Dylan songs.
Alright. That sounds good to me.
So we'll pick something during the break, and we'll surprise you on the other side. So we'll be right back.
I'm just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. I'm just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. I'm just one too many mornings. And a thousand miles behind. I'm just one too many mornings. And a thousand miles behind. But down the street the dogs are barking, and the day is getting dark. As the night begins to fall, then the dogs will lose their bark. Then the silent night will shatter from the sounds inside my mind. And I'm one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind.
From the crossroads of my doorstep, my eyes, they start to fade.
but it's a restless, hungry feeling that it does nobody no good.
When everything that I'm saying,
you can say it just as good. 'Cause you're right from your side, and I'm right from mine.
We're both just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. Yeah, we're just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. We're just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. We're just one too many mornings and a thousand miles behind. We're just one too many.
And that was Johnny Cash featuring the Avett Brothers, One Too Many Mornings. And One Too Many Mornings is, of course, from the Bob Dylan 4-CD set, in which it's all sorts of covers. And it was the first one that I could get in the machine. That's how I picked it.
And apropos, anyway. I would say.
Oh, yeah. One Too Many Mornings of the 140-year Indian Act.
Yes.
Absolutely. Daylene and I are talking to Susanna DeRange and Robin Pitawanaquat.
Well done, yeah.
Nicely done, John.
I'm trying to redeem myself here. Yeah.
Jim.
And we're talking about the occupation of the INAC offices on Albert here in Regina. And this is basically in reaction to news that there were some, 11 attempts on just in one occasion at the Attawapiskat Reserve. And basically a reaction that this cannot be allowed to continue. We can't just sort of shrug our shoulders and shake our heads and, gee, that's too bad. We have the ability to make the changes that need to be made, and we have to find out what's stopping it and get the roadblocks out of the way and make changes.
I'd like to read you something. I was talking to Jim about this before the show. On Wednesday, May 18th, 2016, Attawapiskat Chief Bruce Shishish presented a $5,000 donation to the Alberta Fire Relief. The Red Cross quoted Shishish as saying, "We wanted to help." So, in their own state of emergency, in their own time of need, in their own time of crisis, they still raised money to help another community in need. Now, what does that say about the people of Attawapiskat? They know what it's like to be without, and they know what it's like to suffer, and they wanted to help others who were suffering. It has been my experience in life that sometimes those who have the least give the most. Can you comment on that situation, and how does this make you feel?
This is how we roll as Indigenous peoples. We take care of one another. It choked me up because I have so many family members that lost their homes in Fort McMurray, and it's very emotional for me. And it was emotional while it was happening until I knew everybody was to safety as well. And it's emotional to me, but it also resonates. This is how we roll, because a homeless man came to our camp and we were giving him coffee and if there was food. He wasn't asking for it. He just came to be with us. And he came there one night and handed us $100. Yeah. There wasn't a dry eye there. And he goes, "Thank you for standing up for the people. This is so good what you're doing. Take this." So that's how we roll. Mm-hmm. We know, we feel it, and we give even when we have nothing left to give.
I think there's also something to it that I'm sure that the people of Attawapiskat understand that if you deal with a situation as early as possible, it prevents a lot of other issues coming up down the road. So pouring money in immediately when the crisis first becomes known, then you can prevent all sorts of costs down the road. So I'm sure that they have a much stronger awareness of that than many of us.
So speaking of which, the Trudeau government, can you comment on that and how he seemed to be in the beginning very... it seems to have been a very all talk and no action, from what I can see. It's been a lot of, as you've said, Susanna, a lot of photo ops and a lot of words, but I haven't seen a lot of action at this point. And another thing I want to say, and the people of Fort McMurray have needed help, but when the tragedy occurred in Fort McMurray, people jumped immediately to help. But then when there's problems in like Attawapiskat, Lalosh, people come out. But then, like you say, all that we've gotten so far are two security guards and, you know, a monitor or, you know, something in the school.
A metal detector.
Metal detector. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a divide in the assistance.
Okay.
So there's two.
Yeah, there's two things here. And one is some people jokingly call Trudeau Harper Light. And when you think about it, what Harper did with UNDRIP, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, mm-hmm. Harper did much the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, Trudeau did much the same, just worded a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. The same thing, Harper said there was no colonialism in Canada, even though until 1960, Indigenous people were under the Department of Immigration and Colonization, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And Trudeau said something about we don't carry the baggage of colonial past. There's not much difference. It's worded nicely. He's this handsome, sexy man, and everybody's goo-goo gaga, but there's not much. And when you talk about a divide, I was thinking about a report that was just released, I think, 2 days ago. And in Saskatchewan, child poverty rates on reserve are the second highest mm-hmm. in Canada at 69%, 7 out of 10 children. Yet for non-First Nations, we are one of the lowest in the country at 13%. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you? It tells you that people really don't care about Indigenous people. It's that fear again. They're going to take over if we let them, and where will we go? And with that fear, that's what happens. And yes, some people, when I talk about it, say, well, that's the biggest evacuation that's ever happened in Canadian history. So, of course, people are jumping on. But there is that underlying thing. Oh, my God, all these people. And with Indigenous people, it's the other. That's mm-hmm. the other over there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with Fort McMurray, it's not the other.
Yeah.
I also think part of it is that Indigenous people are blamed for their own mm-hmm. Misfortune. Whereas the people of Fort McMurray, a wildfire, even though, you know, depending on who you speak to, there may be reasons for why the conditions were ripe for such a raging fire. But, yeah, the people of Fort McMurray are seen as victims, whereas the people of Attawapiskat and other First Nations are seen as the perpetrators of their own misfortune. So I think that's a huge part of it. And people don't want to help those that they feel aren't helping themselves. And yet, one of the major issues in Attawapiskat is their water situation and then the mold. And it was the diamond mine mm-hmm. that flooded their water system, that flooded their sewage system, made it all back up into the homes, destroyed the water system, destroyed the homes through sewage and then later mold, and yet the diamond mine isn't being held responsible. They're not being sought out for damages, and Indigenous people instead are being blamed.
And we're blamed for many things. All the time, there's this kind of progressive group that decided to help Attawapiskat and had some people on the ground there. And one of their emails was saying, yes, that's good if you send money as well, because so-and-so's working with the suicidal girls, and that's a label, and I'm not going to get into that because they do mental health first with aid, and that's, again, blaming victims and labeling victims. And this person feeds them because their parents would spend it gambling and drinking, and I'm like, oh, my God, oh, mm-hmm. my God. I did talk to the group, and they've realized some things about that, and we're making inroads. But people don't understand how language impacts things. And, okay, that doesn't mean all the parents gamble and drink. And if they're doing that, we need to look at the psychosocial effects of poverty, of racism, of colonialism, and treat that instead of labeling it and denying assistance to anybody. So it's that systemic, institutional. People don't even realize that there's racism or prejudice that they carry inside, and then that comes forward. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole gamut of things. And like Robin said, that re-victimizes everybody.
Right. I make the mistake of reading the comment sections. I do this all the time to myself, and I think, Daylene, don't do it, and I do. And this is where you see so much ignorance and stupidity and racism. And people are so misinformed. And there are still so many stereotypes and misconceptions out there. And you read the comments that, well, all the chiefs take all the money and they, you know, they spend it all. And so I have no sympathy for the people, you know, blah, blah, blah. They have no idea. The money is not there. And the chiefs are not doing this.
Well, there are situations where, depending on who the band and council are, there'll be a bit of nepotism in communities, but there is so little to go around. There's not enough to cover all the programs. And I'm sure that people, once they are elected, feel that pressure, especially mm-hmm. from their loved ones, to help me out, please. Like, we're desperate. We need something. And so, I mean, there are problems on reserves when there isn't enough to go around, for sure, mm-hmm. and when programs are severely underfunded.
And there is corruption. I'm not going to say that there isn't, but they need to look at their own governments. The corruption yes. there is at way bigger dollars because there's more to be corrupt with.
Exactly.
And it's like that saying goes, when you point one finger, three point back at you. So if there is corruption from leadership, they've learned really well from the oppressors who, through the Indian Act, have imposed a government structure on us that wasn't our own that leads to corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I'm not going to deny there's corruption.
But I think there's been studies that show that municipalities have a higher rate
of course.
Corruption than bands. And the thing is that bands have they have a lot more audits on a regular basis. Like the paperwork that goes into running reserve funds are ridiculous. That you could cut back on a lot of funds just not having to deal with all that paper and the people who have to read all that paper, if anybody ever does. I don't mm-hmm. know.
And sometimes it's ludicrous. Like, my band has taken no money from government for 3 years. We haven't signed a contribution agreement, haven't done anything, and under the Harper government, they were going to sue us for not reporting. It's like, reporting what?
Yeah.
I told the chief at one point, you should say, I received zero, I spent zero, and I got zero left. He goes, no, I'm not doing that on principle. But it was ludicrous. What are we getting sued for? But it's, again, it goes back to that power and that control. And we are more monitored and scrutinized than anybody I've ever seen. I wish they would scrutinize the government like that.
Yeah.
And corporations even more.
Yes, corporations need it for sure. Like the diamond mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting back to the camp. How are you sustaining yourselves in the camp? How are you getting food and other services? Have the general public been stepping up to donate supplies? Do you all stay overnight, or do you Do you take turns? What's the political climate like? Do you have a one leader, or do you? I think you talked about this, Susanna. You kind of you step up. One person steps up. You take turns leading.
I think the best visual for it is if you picture us as a flock of geese, and geese, they always take turns as the leader. As one tires out, then another one takes the lead. So I think that's how we've been. I mean, Sue and I have been the main points of contact for media, so sometimes people might then associate us as leaders, but we only go forward on things that are consensus reached with the group. So we have daily meetings, we check in with the group, we don't make any major decisions on anything without consensus.
And there are no leadership. We're in a people's social autonomous movement, and that means there's no leadership. Every decision is consensus, and if somebody doesn't agree, it has to be worked out until everybody agrees.
And historically, isn't that how?
Yes. In fact, APTN was at the camp for our anniversary, and I just saw what APTN put, and at the end, that's somebody that they interviewed said, "We are living our traditions here." Mm-hmm. We are going by consensus the way we always govern ourselves. And that always brings a beauty to things because people feel that they belong, that they have a voice, that they matter. And when you belong, something really, really blossoms and it takes off because everybody feels it's their baby.
There's no hierarchies.
Nope. There's no hierarchy at all. And you were asking how do we sustain is people have been bringing food constantly, donating things constantly. QPE gave us a big canopy tent. Unifor brought us a generator. And
Canadian Mental Health Association has been very supportive.
God, yes.
They've provided us with use of their facilities for bathrooms, for kitchen sometimes. We do all our dishes there. And they've also been very generous with food.
And St. Paul's Church right away came there. They're behind us and said, you can park there for free. You can use our washrooms during the day. People are really chipping
rallying in.
And if anybody that's hearing this wants to bring food or tents or blankets or anything, please bring it. Look at Ochapaways Reserve. They brought us a teepee. Like, come on. Wow. That's incredible. When we had our first barbecue, some women drove in from Fort Capel and donated food.
That's wonderful.
You know, so that's how we're sustaining ourselves. And so all of you listening, please help us sustain and bring people down to meet with us. Everybody's always welcome. Even when we're having our meetings, if there's somebody that drops in, they're part of the meeting and they have a voice and they're part of the consensus. And as for sleeping there, it rotates. And of course, it's not everybody.
There are a few people that have been quite consistent that have been there nearly every day from the beginning. I myself have stayed there four nights with at least one of my children at any given time.
It must be exciting. It's like a fun sleepover.
My two older ones aren't so keen on it. They said it's a little bit too loud. The traffic is really loud on Albert Street.
I bet.
But my youngest loves it, and she'd be there every night if we let her. So.
I'm just curious, are you having, or is there any hint of a possibility of having meaningful discussions with government? I mean, basically, this is what it's all about, isn't it? Like, we're here, there are issues, let's talk about this in a meaningful way, and is that happening?
I feel that it has the potential for it right now. I don't feel like we're in a situation where talks need to be shut down. There have been some bits of information that have come to us, and we hope that they continue coming to us.
It's always hard to say with government. Mm-hmm. I think it's like pulling teeth, but I think we're getting some teeth pulled. And I think we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And some people question us from the outside. Well, isn't that reformist? Aren't you asking the oppressor to solve it? And that's not what we're doing. We're trying to find out what's really there.
Mm-hmm.
An oppressor will never solve it for you.
No.
They might have an awakening at some point and realize they need to do things differently. But come on, it's been 140 years. How do you undo 140 years of oppression? No. However, I think, like Robin said, there's potential, and I think maybe we're starting to pull the teeth. But we need this information. We need to know how to go forward. We need to know what's out there. We need to know what's already being done, because as we move forward, whatever is good there, we don't need to reinvent it.
Have you talked with any MPs? I'm curious.
No.
So none have stopped by to visit? None have stopped by and chatted with you? None?
Oh, yeah, one. Oh. That was not an enjoyable experience. It was a situation where it just feels like they're still campaigning. They sat down and they told... I don't know if you're familiar with the term mansplaining or white-splaining.
Yes, it was
that. And just sort of telling us what we should be... you know, feeling about it, or you just not at all understanding why we were there, or
telling you what you should know.
Yeah, and then asking us to compile information for them to tell them how they should be doing things. I'm like, no, you need to go out and educate yourself. I mean, we've had to educate ourselves, not only in the mainstream system, but we've had to re-educate ourselves, and it's an ongoing process on our own cultures, our languages.
I want to know who it was.
It's so hard to find all that information.
And when Romeo Saganish was in town, he said he was going to stop by, but he didn't have time, so he drove by twice and honked and waved. So I guess it's the best we've gotten from anybody.
Yeah.
And then I got a text saying that was him.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah. That was really nice.
Honking, yeah.
So I think it speaks volumes that no other MP or...
No MLA.
No MLAs have stopped by.
Right.
I contacted Ralph Goodale's office, but I never heard back from him. So.
Interesting.
And we called Warren McCall when the fence was coming up, and they did seem concerned and said they'd look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I think somebody said Warren stopped by at some point and brought some water.
There were a few provincial NDP people that have stopped by in some capacity or another. People who've lost the election, actually, even showed the most support, really. but they're... Nicole Serrar, she was there for at least one of our events.
Yeah, and I know they said that Warren chatted for a bit and brought a whole bunch of, bottles of water for us. So I guess we have had a little bit.
Yeah.
But we did tell INAC that we were not going out to Treaty 4 with all the Trudeau fever, and nor to try to meet with him, but would they ask him to come sit down for tea? Well,
and that did not happen.
I don't even think they got hold of him.
Yeah.
I'm surprised about Mr. Goodale, because he typically is very good about coming out to events.
I don't remember him being particularly good on Indigenous issues ever.
No?
Well,
but I don't know him
don't
enough
know.
To know about
no,
that.
No, he's come out at events.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He has. So I'm kind of surprised too, but who knows what they've said about what or where or to these politicians, and maybe he thinks he has bigger fish to fry. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
No, we're into the last 2 minutes here, and I'm still curious. I guess in answer to the question, what's it going to take to sort of shut things down? You don't know yet.
No,
I think in large part it will come from the communities. They'll be like, okay, we're good, thanks.
Yeah, like everybody asks us, when is this over? And we'll say, and the only answer we have is, we'll know when it's over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it won't be over.
Right.
The camp will be down.
Right.
But the movement will go on.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I would like people to come out to our Facebook page, too. Visit us on our Facebook page. Stay tuned. We have over 500 likes now, and we'd like it to keep growing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Colonialism
that
No
good.
More, Solidarity Camp.
And Twitter, too.
And for the people who don't really... understand what's going on here. There's a lot of good reading on the internet. You can find this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Or come to the camp and ask us.
Come to the camp.
Even better.
And then you get free food and some
and bring food.
Coffee. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yep.
Food is always welcome.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I think we're going to shut it down here and close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. If you have any questions about today's show or other human rights questions, email us at humanrightsradio@cjtr.ca. Past shows can be accessed by visiting humanrightsradio.podbean.com. Pioneering human rights campaigner Peter Benenson often said, it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.